And action. Welcome, everybody. It is BMP Weekly, episode 134. It is 13th of September. It's the 13th day. No, never mind. I live in house number 13, so it doesn't matter. Now,
superstitious,
you know, random fact of the day. And it's sunny. Now, in the BMP Weekly, I always talk about the latest on Microsoft 365 platform. We touch also the new UX level changes and all of that stuff. And we typically have a visitor. We're now in season four. So we're doing this a bit differently. So we're not going to have the visitor here together with us the whole hour, rather just do an intro and then the visitor and then the articles, say, separate recording. But this time, Mark Anderson from Zoompraxis Consulting is joining us. Anything what you're expecting to happen, Pauli?
I'm expecting him to join. I'm expecting. So it's been a while. So we talked to Mark, I think, 2 years back already. So yep. Anyway, it's been a while, right? And also because the conferences, the in-person events aren't there anymore, it will be interesting to catch up with Mark and hear from him how he experiences community, how he stays in touch with everybody, and basically how things are on his side of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think Mark has really unique kind of insights also from a historical perspective on the client side development story of everything, because he created one of the most widely adapted JavaScript library within the Microsoft 365 many years back. But then obviously, yeah, that was outdated and at some point. So, but it's actually interesting to get his insights on that as well. But cool. Anything else interesting what's happening on your side this week? So just out of curiosity before we get to the discussion.
So. A lot, right? So one thing, we mentioned that already the last week. I'm working now on a series of learn modules around Viva connections and how you can extend that. We're working on that together. And the idea is there to, yes, you're right.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, so sorry. It's in pile.
The idea
of
is to,
list, so,
yeah. Yeah, to show everyone how you can extend Viva connections to your needs, what it is, what is available, what are the options, what are different experiences.
Options, yeah.
Exactly. So to have a good set of learning material around that, it shows you the story end to end, as opposed to having this fragmented articles that shows you every little bit. But then if you start, it's like, okay, so where do I start?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So,
but one thing related on that, actually. Yep. So on that one, so because we talked about this one before we started the recording, it's actually interesting to see. And this Viva connection is a really good example where we are surfacing a lot of the Microsoft 365 platform capabilities together. Mm-hmm. And what is the underlying technology? It doesn't really matter that much, because it's all about how do we combine the bits and pieces of the best of the breed, so to say, in the platform. But then at the same time, we're seeing this kind of an interesting confusion for developers and partners on, hey, can I extend this? Can I do X, Y, and Z? And then the internal discussions are like, well, of course you can. It's built using da-da-da-da-da. But how would the external people know? So it's an interesting, it's been really interesting to say within the past week, that mental mindset where, of course, external people are not super detailedly aware what about the Viva connection and what can I extend on that. You can, by the way, extend everything on it, and there's no licensing cost or anything, so that's all good. Internal people who've been building that for like a year, the mental mindset being like, well, of course you can do this. Why do we need to even mention that? Well, they wouldn't know. So it's it's an interesting always the challenge, yeah, of a engineering, marketing, and driving adaption, teaching people, and creating those learn modules is one piece of that puzzle, for sure. So
yeah, it is very much like my dad used to say, or says still, the point of view depends where you sit.
Yeah.
Right. So internally, you're surrounded by SPFX, right? So it's like, of course, like, duh, it's that. But on the outside, if all you see is the marketing side and the business side of it, how would you connect the dots? How would you know what's behind it, and how can you and what at all? Right. So it very much depends on where you stand and what you know, that you can connect the dots and you can put it inside the context, as opposed to say, like, okay, so this is an interesting thing. Everybody around me talks about that, but the one thing that I do not know is how can I extend it or not, if at all, right? So
I don't know that there's a reason I was doing something else, and then I ran into quotes from Henry Ford, and he had something super. So that related on what you're saying, the perspective. One of the quotes, this is actually really spot on. If there's one secret of success, it lies in an ability to get the other person's point of view and see things from that person's angle as well as from your own.
Yeah.
That's actually really good. That is really, really good. So because you need to understand whom you're actually telling the story and who do you want to have to understand that. And if you assume that they know exactly what you know, that's not the case. So
exactly. And I guess at the end of the day, it's always about the balance, right? Like how much do you need to explain to not to explain too much because you will go too deep too far, but also not too little to give them the context that they need to understand the whole thing. So it is a balancing act. And you don't want to err either on the either their extreme.
Yep, absolutely. No, anyway, that's a good intro. getting sidetracked. So let's actually jump to this week's interview together with Mark Anderson from Sympraxis Consulting, talking about his past and the future and the focus areas, what that Sympraxis have right now. And then we'll come back on the articles right after that. So welcome, Mark, joining us today on the lovely Monday afternoon, at least in here, if it's morning for you. Sunny.
Oh,
well, it hasn't arrived. Now, the excitement.
Enthusiasm,
right?
Like, yay.
Now, thank you for joining us. So good to have you here. Let's start with a quick introduction. So for those who do not know, who's Mark Anderson? Who are you?
Well,
are you the guy behind of Netscape?
Yeah, I'm not that guy, actually. If I were that guy, I think I'd probably behave a little differently than I do. I'm not sure how. We can think about that. No, I'm Mark Anderson. I live near Boston, Massachusetts in the U.S., and I've been in Microsoft MVP for, I go and count my chips, 11 years.
Congratulations.
I've been working with SharePoint since 2003 or 2004. SharePoint's still my love. Because it enables so many of the things that I care about. You know, I actually believe in this word called collaboration. I believe that there's far less of it in organizations than we actually need in order for those organizations to be successful. So that's a big part of why I care about this platform. I've also done, have a lot of history with knowledge management and balanced scorecard and things like that. So it's all about helping an organization function at a much higher level than it is at any given time, and every organization can improve. Anyway, so I'm president of Sympraxis Consulting, which I started back in 2008 with a buddy of mine, Pete Stirpy. He's moved on to do some other stuff, but I have a great team. There are six of us, and we are focused pretty much entirely on the Microsoft 365 stack. And we love working with these technologies because they can help us accomplish the kinds of things I was just talking about.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's more than anyone's ever wanted to know about me, including my mother.
Cool. And I think, what does it, 4 MVPs currently in Sympraxis from those 6? Is it 4? It's pretty high
yes,
ratio,
it
actually.
4. So, it is 4 out of 6.
That's what
we're working on it. We can probably improve that number.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as part of this, let's say, you're basically focusing on enabling people to be more collaborative and more productive within their work. What does that mean in practice? What kind of cases or what kind of things Sympraxis actually does?
Well, it's interesting because at least to me, the technology is a piece of what we do. And then there's a lot of, you know, softer, squishy stuff, which people sort of get confused by when they hire us, because we start talking to them about things like, well, how do you communicate internally and how do you motivate people? What are their incentives and things like that? So that, you know, it's worth mentioning that we're not just technology people, though. Yeah. We certainly do a lot of technology work. I mean, that's what people tend to come to us for. We build intranets. We build solutions that sit on top of SharePoint or Teams. We configure the cloud setup for some of our customers. I mean, I think between Todd Clint's expertise in the sort of administrative side to Julie and Derek's phenomenal development skills, we sort of do everything on that spectrum. And then we've got a lot of interest in good information architecture, good user experience. You know, you guys know, you build a great technical solution and it's not fun to use. Yeah. Fun being a little bit of a fuzzy word, but if it's not easier to use than doing the alternative, people won't use it. And so, you know, we care a lot about not adoption. I really don't like that word because at that point you're too late in the process, but working with users to try to build solutions that actually meet their needs, but do it the way they actually see as productive. Yeah. So when we launch that thing, they actually are looking forward to using it as opposed to, oh no, here's another thing that IT built for us that we don't want.
Yeah. IT forcing us to use and we don't, which is kind of a classic story.
Woo, you know.
Don't move my keys.
Well, yeah, that's
cheese
a big
goes
part of
right
it.
Here.
Yeah. Well,
and you know, I always joke about change because change is, no one likes change unless they're doing it to someone else.
Yeah.
And most technical efforts are viewed as, well, but you know, it's an upgrade. It's a new piece of technology. Of course it's better. Like there's not rarely enough discussion around, but what is this going to do to people? You know, how are they going to come out the other end of this with a feeling that they've received a gift as opposed to they've had something unpleasant done to them?
Yeah.
I pick on IT departments in a generic sense all the time because I see it constantly. You know, on Monday, you'll have a brand new blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, people walk in on Monday and they can't figure out what to do with their computer. You know, so they can't start their work, which is really what they're trying to do every day.
Yeah.
It's just their work done and hopefully do a good job at it.
Mark, now the one thing that I'm interested in, because you hit there an interesting spot, right? So oftentimes people try to address that issue with creating a focus group or get people who represent a bigger group. And with that, they kind of assume that, well, I mean, we had the buy-in from the key stakeholders or whatever, so that is exactly what people want, right? But they often forget the key step of communicating the change, the need of change, the steps, the benefits, and so forth and so on. How do you see that happening in the field? Do you see that problem indeed taking place, or do you see people addressing that, being aware of that or not?
I think it's all over the map. I mean, I think some people totally understand it and do a good job with it. And I think some people just sort of look at, I mean, I've had people look at me recently with sort of a blank look, you know, what do you mean? And so I think it really is all over the map. The best example I have in my past is when I worked at Staples, which was back in the early 90s. So a very long time ago. And we were moving from
2 years back.
So. Yeah, just a few years back, we were moving from a VAX platform to an AS400. So, you know, I'm dating myself big time, but we had not a focus group. We were rewriting the systems that ran the delivery business. So we didn't have a focus group. We had a group of people who met with us on several times a week through the entire process from the call center, from the warehouse, we had to be physically in a room back then. There was no other way to do it. And we would show them what we were doing. We weren't, you know, like, this is what we've done in the last week. This is how it's gone. You know, what do you like about this? What do you not? And at the end of it, we had a system that was totally different than what we would have aimed at in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, it was a guy named Ken Chasen ran that whole thing. I had the old system. He had the new system. And it was just so productive. And by the time that new system launched, because we'd had, I mean, we picked some people from the call center who we knew were, you know, sort of not necessarily senior people, but people who people listened to. And by the time that new system launched, everybody wanted it. They knew, they already knew it was going to be better than the old one because their own people were telling them that. And
now, yeah.
I'm done. Sorry. I can stop.
No. I'm that's actually an interesting discussion
Don't Dutch word with me, man.
Now, if we think about, you probably get the term of good enough IT and the way we've transformed from 90s to 2020s, whatever that's decade is called to 2020s or whatever. We more and more being kind of transformed from a proper solution design, end user studies, and all of that stuff in a company level to good enough IT, which is basically, well, as long as we have these things, let's just ship it and force them to use it. Well, it's good enough. I don't care how it's being built or what's behind of the things. Are you seeing this kind of a similar set of level of transition or in your customers? So where people are not necessarily that much interested anymore on the system designing or system experience. And of course, we as a Microsoft, we provide some level of that, but still from a customer perspective.
Well, good enough IT could almost be equated with an MVP, minimum viable product.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we think is good enough to get you started. And of course, that means you can't just leave it there.
Yeah.
So I think that the people, it depends on the organizations that we work with. I think when we're hired by people who are not in IT, there's an incredible passion around making something that's going to matter to the people who are going to use it. I don't see that as consistently inside IT. I've been in this business for almost 40 years now, and I keep waiting for this giant transformation of IT to happen. And it's sort of gradually, but it still hasn't really happened in my mind. I would love IT departments to, the good enough IT to me is, no, sorry. I mean, if that's your definition, you need to find another job. If I were the CEO, I wouldn't put up with that. So I think people who use systems understand when they see something good and when they see something bad. And we have the entire consumer world now to compete with. You know, in the old days, you know, the new accounting system's coming out. It doesn't matter if you like it because you have to use it.
Yep.
And there wasn't anything to compare it to. Well, it's not as nice as this other accounting system that I use over here. No, I mean, there was one. And now we have this whole consumer world. We have Facebook. We have, you know, Twitter. We have all of these platforms that people use in their daily lives. And they see how easy and how productive-ish those platforms can be.
Productive.
You know, I'm a member of some groups on Facebook, and the way it works for people to collaborate is really good, right? And you know, we have common interests. So people see how things can go well, and you know, maybe those platforms aren't the right ones to pick, but you know, they see things in the consumer market. And I think that they should expect things, you know, applications that are as good as those consumer applications in the workplace. Just like the workplace ought to have better bandwidth than their house. You should expect better something to get your work done.
But isn't that getting also equal because everybody's working from home nowadays or more and
well,
more?
Sure, so it's, sure. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's funny because some people have found that, you know, working from home, this works a lot better than working
exactly.
in our
yes.
office. And that's a sad state of affairs, right?
Really?
And sometimes the main reason for that is the excessive security lockdowns that are going on inside organizations to prevent people from doing things that they often need to do.
Yeah.
And it slows everything down.
And then they bypass the system and start using completely competitor platforms for sharing files and all of that stuff.
Or they work from home. So I think that, you know, this whole pandemic has been a transformational exercise from that perspective. The organizations that have tried to push their security perimeter out into everybody's house, well, you can't really do that, right?
Sure.
So
sure.
The more uncomfortable that the more friction is involved in being able to connect into the corporate systems, the less likely it is anyone's even going to do it.
True.
I have another topic. If we're already done with this,
I think we're done with this. Yes.
Okay. Okay. So a few years back, like if I go, I don't know, let's say 2008, 9, 10 ish, I remember we sat down. I think that was one of the summits. And you talked me through like
summit?
How you
explain what's summit?
The MVP summit, which is the once a year back then gathering in person in Redmond for MVPs across the world to come to Redmond to campus at Microsoft and hear out what's coming, give feedback, hear back, and so forth and so on. So back then, Mark and I would sit on campus, and Mark, I recall you walked me through how back then you build applications in SharePoint. how you would change things about lists, about views, how you would extend pages with pieces of script you would drop on a page. And that was very much back then in the world where SharePoint ran primarily on-premises, IT was in charge of the update cycle. Fast forward to now, we're in a world where we're online, or majority of folks are in the cloud. Updates take place every week, every other week. There is different degree of the things we are recommended to do with Pages and SharePoint. How do you change? How do you see that affecting, one, the type of apps you build, b, the kind of power that your customers have in SharePoint, and they see that as a place, or to what degree they look more towards Power Platform, Power Apps, Power Automate, sure, as the place where they do what they used to do in SharePoint?
Ah, but those were the days, weren't they? You just gave me a little warm feeling on set. Actually, Todd just pointed out to me there was a thread on Reddit over the weekend where somebody was asking, you know, I just moved from SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint Online, and none of my SP services stuff is working. What should I do? And it's like, So, you know, I think that there were a lot of us who ended up understanding that we could build client-side applications, really. What a lot of that was all about was, yes, we were putting arbitrary script. People always love to say arbitrary script. Like, yeah, it's just some script I found somewhere, and I don't know what it does. No, it wasn't arbitrary script. It was script that we wrote to do specific things, and we would take over the page and do whatever we needed. And I think that was... I like to think that laid some of the foundation to get to the SharePoint framework. The SharePoint framework is the modern, sort of script in the page approach, but with gates to it. You know, you have to get somebody to deploy it for you if you're sort of a departmental, like power user kind of person. So that's unfortunate, because usually the giant spanking machine that is IT makes that as difficult as possible. And now that we're in Microsoft 365, we have a suite of products. You're right. It's not SharePoint. It's all, you know, it's all of these things that fit together. And I think the way to solve any particular business problem has always been, let's see if we can do it with the out-of-the-box capabilities. You know, let's start with that. If you're a developer, that is unfortunately not what you typically start with. But let's just see if there's a box we can tick that'll make this thing a little bit better or different than what we have out, you know, when we first rev it up. So that's always the first check. Now there are a lot of other capabilities that have been, I'll say, you know, they're sort of like gooey batter. They've been baked-ish into the product. For instance, the JSON formatting for lists and some other capabilities there, where there's a UI for some of it, and then you end up writing JSON. So it's, again, sort of in that spectrum of, is it good for the consumer part of the world? It's gotten close to that, but it's not. I don't think it's baked enough yet. So we have those capabilities in the middle too. So we often can get to a really good solution without writing any of what we traditionally called code, though to most people JSON is absolutely code. Also it's a more complex landscape, right? So we might say, well, we want a form where we're going to be able to update three different SharePoint lists. Okay, well, that's a Power App. Well, what's that? You know, how do I understand that's the thing that I need? And then when the form is filled out and you commit those changes, then what happens next? Oh, well, you might need Power Automate. So we're looking at all of these different services. You know, you might want to create a task in Planner. You might want to put that mention into a Teams conversation. And so I think the surface area for architects has grown immensely. But that's a very good thing, because we can build solutions that I think are more tailor-made to what people really need. And we may not ever write a lick of code per se. You know, we might configure some things. That spectrum of, you know, no code to, heavy duty code, I think we have far more in that middle area, which I love so much. And so there are a lot of capabilities where the citizen developers or power users or whoever, you know, whatever name we want to give them this month, can do good things as long as IT doesn't block those capabilities, which unfortunately I see a lot of.
It's kind of an understandable from an IT perspective, because if they don't know what the capabilities are, it's easier to decline and close your eyes and look at
it. So what's the answer there, Vesa? Is it to close it down or to learn what
educate.
It is?
Education.
It's just like with the security stuff. I mean, you know, people in IT lock things down because our users are too dumb to ever understand, you know, the fact that clicking on a link in an email is going to cause problems or whatever it is. Well, they're dumb until you teach them.
Yeah.
Right. I was having that discussion with somebody on Twitter the other day. I mean, we have to take user education and IT education. I mean, everybody should be learning every day in their job. And turning things off because you don't understand them is probably one of the stupidest moves there is.
Yeah. You're buying a BMW with four doors and three of them are welded in, basically, just in case.
No blinkers.
No blinkers.
Well, here in Boston, that's actually de rigueur. I mean, we don't use those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know where you're heading anyway, so you don't need to.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know where I'm
Yeah. Now, on kind of a related area, so that's actually an interesting, the let's say, broadening of the spectrum, of course, there's so many products nowadays and there's so many things happening, and which kind of beneficial for Microsoft side as well, but it's confusing for the customers and well, partners as well. How do you see the partner play? In general, in this kind of you've been there when you were partly in on-prem. We introduced Microsoft 365, Office 365, BPOS first, BPOS, and then Office 365, and then Microsoft 365.
What is BPOS anyway?
BPOS was business. What was it? Business
productivity online services.
Services. Yeah. Anyway, so that was the Exchange, SharePoint. Anyway,
that probably was about it.
Yeah. But how do you see the partner play on this transition? There's a lot of things happening as part of this transition. The collaboration has kind of now moved from it being a SharePoint based more as a Teams piece, but now it's getting merged back on being both with the Microsoft Viva. What's the partner play? Is there a room for partners? Is there people who? Is there money to be made in Microsoft 365? And I hope the answer is yes, because otherwise we will have to cut this from the just.
Well, the answer is yes, but the way you phrase the question is making me sort of go, because you know, when you say partners, to me that implies the partner program, and
necessarily. I'm thinking like if you're looking into traditional, let's say, collaboration or document management together with customers, there was always a play where a partner can make money on helping consulting, building stuff, building extensibility, and putting bits and pieces together, and then customers were willing to pay on that. Is there still a room for that? Is internet in a box still a viable product?
I think that there are a lot of things that enterprises end up doing that they only need to do once or they only do a few times. And that's certainly a play for external people. You know, let's migrate from 2010 to SharePoint Online. You're only going to do that one time. You should hire somebody to do that. And that's not because I'm a consultant. It's just because I've seen some of the just ridiculous work that goes into doing it when you don't know how to do it. I think that the other part of it is that Microsoft, for all of its brilliance, and I really do think Microsoft is full of some of the smartest people I've ever met, who are often boxed in by working in a large organization. But I think that us out here as consultants or partners, whatever you want to call us, can go into organizations and try to work with them and understand how they work internally in ways that Microsoft probably never even wants to. You know, Microsoft has its consulting services, and I assume it's still out there doing great things. I don't hear much about MCS anymore. But I think that there's always going to be a space there for other parties. It used to always really rankle me when Microsoft would get on stage at one of the big conferences and say, you know, for every dollar you spend on Microsoft software, there's $10 in, you know, you're going to spend with third parties. It's like, you shouldn't say that out loud. You know, that's not a good thing, right? That means that
it depends, right?
It depends from perspective, yeah. True.
But to say it as, and it wasn't at the sales things, because I didn't go to the sales things, and it wasn't at the partner things, because I didn't go to the partner things. It was at the conferences where they were talking to real end users of, you know, Ignite kind of things.
Yeah.
And so I think, I'd like to think that number has come down. But there's always some value to be added with people who, you know, when you're building an intranet, for example, if you're working with a new platform and you don't know how that, you know, SharePoint Online and you don't, or Teams, depending on how you look at it, and you don't understand how those platforms work, having somebody come in and teach you how it all works so that you can come up with something optimized, I think is always going to be a good spend of your dollars. I'd like to think that Microsoft is continuing the arc of making the products mature enough so that we actually have less to do. I would like that. I would like it if what we were asked to do was more the high-end stuff as opposed to, you know, we need to write some JSON. I mean, I wouldn't want to get hired just for that. That would be silly, right? Though we certainly take that work. I mean, you know, we like JSON. one other thought. What, you know, you mentioned that you know, SharePoint Online, now it's going into Teams and you got Viva Connections. I do think that there's the sort of longer term strategy, what's the arc of all of this is generally lost to people outside of Microsoft. I think Microsoft is often, you know, well ahead of the marketplace, but very bad at communicating what that vision is.
Yeah.
There are a lot of marketing speak words. I mean, I see phrases in official posts where I read them like five times and I'm thinking, well, what does this combination of words actually mean? You know, what tea leaves can I see in these? And very often you can't. And if you think of, I mean, I do this for a living. I watch what Microsoft says for a living. So from a customer perspective, I think it can be really confusing when, you know, you've got Viva come out of nowhere and all of a sudden it's the only thing that matters. But wait a minute, wasn't Teams the only thing that matters? And well, wait a minute, wasn't, you know, this other thing, you know, it was the year of Yammer. What happened? You know, so, you know, it's a Microsoft curse. It's gotten way better over the years, but I think there's still a lot of room for improvement there.
Yeah. Well, so with that, I think one thing that, so at least from where I sit and what I hear, I know there are a lot of folks who are interested in, like, what is nowadays the role of an intranet? Because originally, if you go back again to 2007, 8, 9, that was the centerpiece of a company that was where, except email, you did your work. You had your files, applications in there. You had your news records. Everything was on your intranet. Nowadays, that is no longer the case, right? So with your customers, Mark, what do you see? What role does the intranet play in their companies?
But I mean, most of the customers we work with at Simpraxis, we see a very clear division between the intranet and doing the work. The intranet is the entry point, the launch pad for getting to the places that you do the work. But if you think, you know, I always try to get people to think of a use case of, I just got hired. I don't know anything about this organization. What do I do? Well, the first thing we ought to tell you to do is to go to the intranet, figure out, you know, what are the departments, you know, who does what, you know, what systems do I need to know if I'm working with these people, all of that kind of stuff. So to me, that set of information, what we tend to implement in communication sites, needs to exist. And it will always need to exist. The form of how it exists, you know, one can debate whether it needs to be sitting in SharePoint or in Teams or pasted on a wall somewhere. The wall has to be virtual these days. But you know, that information has to be out there. You know, what are the templates for putting in my expenses? Or, you know, what, you know, who do I talk to if I have problems with my computer? You know, all of that stuff has to be somewhere. And then how do people get their work done? That's the part that I think is evolving over time, many times driven by the fact that Microsoft has now put a new priority in place. You know, Teams all of a sudden became the thing. We still have SharePoint team sites sitting behind Teams. So if you're working with documents, you're still working with SharePoint. Many people don't care, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But I think that the sort of canvas that you use to work with other people continues to evolve and will continue to evolve. You know, we got things like SharePoint Spaces. I mean, I see some fantastic use cases for that. I haven't had any reason to use it, but you know, what we can accomplish with the technology continues to evolve. So of course there will be new applications as part of the platform where it makes sense.
So what does the intranet mean in essence? Is it enabling people to share information and reading information, or is it a set of tools or whatever it is? And it's at least for me, it's not about the tools, it's not about the products. It's actually the way of enabling people internally to collaborate and share information together, whatever the product is, what they're using for that.
Or so, maybe that is just another thing to change over time, because maybe it's the same thing that in the past we used to call it intranet, and now we call it digital workplace. Maybe it is the same thing, and it's just the overall experience as opposed to a place you go to.
We'll go back to 20 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, the words also don't matter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, CTOs all go to conferences and talk to each other and stuff, and they come up with the next buzz phrase. But at the same, but really, when it comes right down to it, we still have to get people information they need to do their jobs well. You know, I think that, you know, what I do see is a lot of the historical intranets, big air quotes around them, that were moving into SharePoint Online really became such a mashup of people's communicating the outside world and their work in their group in like the same SharePoint site with ridiculous permissions. So that teasing out of those two, the two efforts, you know, communicating out is different than doing our work. And I always use, and everybody at Synpraxis groans when I head into this, I use the sausage factory analogy, right? When you're making the sausage in the back, nobody on earth should know what's going on back there, right? You're in the HR department, you're coming up with the list of benefits for next year. While you're figuring it out, you literally don't want anyone to know what you're talking about, because you're going to change your mind, you're going to word it differently, all that sort of stuff. Once you've got that idea and you can sort of package it and say, this is what you need to know, that's where the intranet thing comes in handy. So separating those two parts of a process, I think, is critical and something that a lot of organizations, because of the way their so-called intranet evolved, they totally lost that. And they got sausage all over the floor, and you know, there's rotting meat hanging on the walls. You know, I mean, it's like what the hell?
Everywhere. It's sausage everywhere. No,
it's just, I mean, it's like
You'll get a sausage. Everybody gets a sausage.
Yeah, but this one's gone bad, so don't eat that one. So I think once we can take people down that road and help them understand, you know, What's the work you do every day versus what you show people that you've done? Those are two very different things. And I think that showing people what you've done is part of what the intranet does, especially if you're a support, right? I mean, you know, maybe you're like, if you're in Microsoft and you're developing a product, you don't really want people to see your ideas on that whiteboard until there's something.
I don't know, right? Maybe, well, like, you know, yeah, it depends on the group.
There's always a short period, even if it's a really short period of time, there's always a time where you're just gelling things and you want to make sure that you get it at least that you have a story to tell before you send that story out in the world.
Sure. Yeah. Cool. That's actually a great, great spot of closing up on this discussion. From a timing perspective, we need to be careful on not going to 2 hours. So
But I'm ready to go for the next. I blocked off 5 hours for this.
Yeah, we know. So maybe we can record it and then we will air another episode with Mark.
Episode
where we'll talk
135,
about
136,
like
137.
Yammer, Teams, what else?
Site templates. So
site templates. There you go. Jeez.
Oh, we didn't even get to.
At least now we have a reason or an excuse, if you like, to get you back soon.
That's true.
Always happy to join you guys. It's great to talk to you. I mean, I wish we could just talk generally more often.
Yeah,
we don't have to record it every time. Sometimes unrecorded bits,
but isn't that to maximizing the productivity, right? So just record.
You notice we talked a bit before we started recording. That was the Sausage Factory. We came up with
we needed to gel some ideas to kind of get to our sausage. Yes,
right. So I mean, this is a common process. This is what we do in our house. It's like my wife and I talk and say, what should we tell the kid about this thing that we don't want to do? You know, it happens everywhere.
That's true. But cool. Thanks, Mark, for this one. We'll definitely get you back on the show. And I think it's awesome discussion. Really good points as well. And it's good to have your experience on this. So cool. Later. Cheers.
Thank you, Mark. Bye.
See ya.
Cool. So that was Mark. And then let's jump right into the articles. So let me share my screen and we'll move forward from there. We don't have a massive amount of articles this time because there's actually super cool stuff what we wanted to talk about coming from Microsoft. To be honest, before I even set up the articles for this recording, I wasn't aware how freaking cool stuff there is available now. So it's like, I missed this. I should have actually paid attention not last week. Now, let's start with this Praise Yourself, Hybrid Work is Hard. Here's how Microsoft Teams and Office 365 can help. And this is from Nicole Hersovich. She's the Microsoft Teams General Manager on the marketing side of the house. And really, really cool post. And actually, this video, which is 3 minutes, absolutely worthwhile of checking it out, because 3 minutes and then you understand that, wow, really cool stuff. But from that video, we then kind of split the key elements in the individual videos. And this one actually, so as we're moving to this hybrid world, I remember when I've been working remotely and everybody else have been working in Redmond in the office, like 25 or 15 people in the meeting room, and you're the only one who's remotely in the screen. And that the feeling isn't that good because you feel different. So what's actually going to be introduced now is a way of splitting the feed from the room, the individual pieces in the video. And that's actually really cool. Also during the detection of who's in a room and what's happening. So really cool stuff together with the device manufacturers on basically making it feel better for the remote workers because this way, everybody is kind of equal and everybody is an individual square. That's actually really awesome.
It is
really
cool.
Really cool stuff. So other thing which we had a look on with Waldeck, and you were excited on this one, but basically a remote controller is a mobile to the meeting. So now that everything is in a cloud, we can control the cloud behavior from the mobile device. So not technically uploading anything from a mobile, you're just basically saying that, hey, this file which is in the cloud in my OneDrive, let's actually stream that directly in a meeting, and you can control that with a mobile device. That's actually really freaking cool as well.
Yeah, and I mean, as such, like, you don't need to have second screen that you might only use when you show stuff. Well, I mean, you can do it now on your phone, right? So you can use that as your second screen assistant kind of thing, and then have only the main screen.
You mean my three screens is not anymore needed? So.
Nope.
All of these investments for nothing. Now, this one is really cool as well, especially if you have a consistent working hours and consistent days when you're working remotely. So basically, we'll add additional metadata for the persona level, where you can then define what are your working hours. Well, working hours you can do already today, but the working remotely hours, which is actually really cool as well. So you can actually assign them, and then that information is basically being updated to your profile. So people know when you are expected to be at the office and when we're working remotely. Actually, really, really cool as well.
I wonder if you can set that, like, for us, like, one day in a year. I'm going to be in the office maybe in February 23.
Yeah, yes, 2023.
Yeah, exactly.
21st of February 2023. So
or not.
Just letting you know advance.
Yeah, exactly.
If the flights are operating, who knows? Cool. Of course, it's different when everybody is working remotely and organization. It depends on the organization, is that valuable or not. But I think in many cases it is. My wife, Fies work, this would be really spot on because they're expected to, what was it, to work at the office 3 days in a month in future. So, or two, or whatever. So, but they're having that discussion. Okay, so should we agree that once a day or once a month we'll have the whole team at the office, which will be then the socializing day? But yeah. Because of course that would be just discussing, but I guess that's okay because the rest of the time people are being more productive from home, because that's what the studies are also showing. So you're being much more productive when you're working from home. Now this one's really cool as well. So think about the situation where you are, you have hot desks, which is typical normal case nowadays. People don't necessarily have their own private rooms, except in certain cases. But then you walk into the ad hoc meeting room and you want to sign in from the device and the microphone to the meeting. You don't have to anymore invite the room. You'll just sign in basically using your identity to the Microsoft Teams device, and then that will show you your meeting information and your data and all of that stuff. And that's actually really, really cool. Something what you called out actually while that was that, well, if you then forgot about signing out, good point. We should have some sort of a proximity. Yeah. That was actually a really good suggestion.
Yeah, exactly. So, because like for one, I don't even know my password.
Yeah, I don't know either.
And it's like probably a blurb of random
hello,
kind of
Windows
like,
hello.
How would I?
Maybe there's a Windows Hello on that. So.
Yeah, maybe, but wouldn't that be then device specific, and then it has to have profiles?
Why does it have
100...
to be device specific? Why can't be that in cloud? It is right now device specific. You're 100% correct on that.
Yep.
Why can't we innovate?
Yeah, stuck on what it is right now. Yes, of course. Well, so, I mean, if we think of along these lines, then like one device that I have with me that proves that I'm me is my phone.
Yeah.
So sure. If I'm around, as you say, proximity. Technology. If I'm around NFC, and I can sign and I can approve that it's me, that is that.
Yeah, that's
so
actually
no
really cool.
Prompt for passwords or anything. Like, no, it's me. I can prompt. I can approve that it's me, and I'm there.
Yeah.
And then when that's I move away,
it signs out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that would be really, really cool. So for sure. And this one really, really cool as well. So absolutely. First time when I saw it was like, well, what does it actually mean? But you can actually set up your presentation in the PowerPoint, and that's a live video feed from your team, so from your camera. So then you can just present directly from the PowerPoint using whatever designers what you and design what you want. And I think that was spot on that we basically then introduced different layouts and all of that stuff using designer. That's like,
yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So this is your publishing scene cutting tool. Yep. Already in PowerPoint, which everybody in the office has, right?
Exactly. So we're kind of really truly combining this modern way of working and the videos and all of the feeds in the presentation tooling, which we know how to use. So
exactly.
Well, I have OBS Studio installed, but it's pretty darn difficult to use comparing on this
it's
one.
It's powerful, but it's a different thing you have to know and use. And unless you create video the whole day, you probably don't know how it works, right?
Really cool stuff, for sure.
Whereas on the other hand, you know exactly how PowerPoint works.
That's true. Well, at least in my case, that's the pre-requirement for being a program manager in Microsoft, right? So show me your PowerPoint slides. Oh, that's pretty cool. We'll hire you. Now,
you're kind of like PM level one, level two, depending on the skills, right?
Exactly. You need to be really good at PowerPoint to get to the principal. Now, cool. This one's then the speaker coach, which is basically analyzing the speed of speech, analyzing the how much you give people a wait time to react on your speech and all of that. So for me, this one would be really good because I'm always speaking too fast. So kind of a slow down.
Well, but that also means that you prepare. So is this live or do you need to pre-record yourself? Like basically live.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which might be confusing as well because then it's telling you it basically slow down.
Well, but I mean, it's the same thing. Like if you speak to an audience, you have exactly the same thing. Like someone in the room will raise their hand, or you will see folks squint. It's like, what is he saying?
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, okay. So they don't get it. Maybe I need to reiterate.
Exactly.
You know. So it's the same thing as you would read a room.
Absolutely. So really, really cool stuff as well. Of course, you need to concentrate, and it might be confusing as well if you get a lot of like messages. Hey, move left, move right, dance a little, smile, and whatever. And
take the stage. Take the stage. On the stage, and then you need to like pace around, yeah, around the whole room.
Yes. Just own it. Now.
And you're like, what?
What does that mean? I own this presentation. Anyway, now, and this one is also good. So it's really good that we're getting this basically correction on the lightning. A lot of people are still, after this 18 months in the pandemic, and don't have a proper lighting in their room. So it's basically fixing that on fly. So.
Yeah.
Really, really cool stuff. And then additional devices, staying from Microsoft Teams in Apple CarPlay is coming as well. Really cool. And then Microsoft Viva is a big, big, big focus area for us as well. So really, really cool stuff. Now on the Viva, let's actually move into the Viva and have a discussion on that. So the Viva Connection public preview was announced. It doesn't mean that it's available right now, but it's coming now. It's starting to roll out, and what it means is that in the past you've been able to implement already extensibility because that went to public preview slightly earlier, but this one basically then brings additional mobile experiences. So with a dashboard and a feed and resources, and this is an evolving space with the Viva Connection mobile app experience. And then also the Viva Connection desktop is keep on evolving, and you will actually see the dashboard also in here. So this is basically the same as you would see in the mobile. So there's a kind of a connection, but since we are in desktop, you can actually have additional capabilities shown as well. And then there's an easier way to actually configure this. So it's no longer just PowerShell and script. There will be more native way of actually enabling the Viva Connection desktop in your tenant. So it basically, cool, with the click of a buttons and settings and all of that
on
stuff. Yes, that's basically the idea. And dashboard with parts is the one which you can see there. That's basically the behind of also the mobile experiences. And then you can use SPFX to build this individual cards. So feed with part is basically then showing what's happening around you as a persona. So it's the company. I don't want to say this company. What does it? Company news, actions, feeds. Changes like news. Already today we can see like this file has been changed and you've been recently watching that file, you might be interested on that. So those kind of things. So from the craft.
So a feed basically.
Yeah. And what was
it? It is what it says it is. It's a feed.
Feed. Yes, exactly. It's a brilliant naming, by the way. So super descriptive.
So yeah, exactly.
Cool. But yeah, so that's now gradually starting to roll out. And it will take a while for a few weeks to actually 100% to roll out. But that's really, really cool. That's now getting out as well. Now, a few other news from Microsoft. So this is basically was mentioned in the first one as well about the interactive collaboration with apps in Microsoft Teams meeting. We jumped on it, but this is more details on it. So there's already a few partners who are doing this, but now you can do more extensibility in the meeting and then design, for example, or work on a information together directly in the meeting, which is really cool as well. So we've been knowing that this is coming, and now we're heading to a re-preview with some of the partners, and there's more additional capabilities available. Underlying tech, it doesn't really technically matter. So the Teams is basically enabling this, and then you can implement whatever is suitable for you. Fluid framework being one of the options of really having that kind of interactive, let's work on this together in, experience. Really, really cool stuff. Good. Then on the developer side of the house, Microsoft 365 developer blog, Elise Young had a blog post related on the latest version of Microsoft Craft Toolkit, 2.3, isn't it? Yes, 2.3. Yes. And there's a two new really big things. So the Teams MSAL2 provider, and then a file list component, both of these being contributed by the community, which is really, really cool. So Simon Ockrain, and then
André Lange.
Yes. And he was actually in the community call last week to do a live demo on this one as well. So really, really cool stuff for sure. And it's great to see more and more controls and capabilities being available in the Craft Toolkit as well. Now, what else? And there's breaking changes in the Me Assignments endpoint in Microsoft Craft Assignments API beta side of the house. And this is kind of a natural, we are evolving things, we're adjusting things before they're going live. it's just inevitable. Sooner or later, there's going to be a small pregnant changes. So, and these are basically adjusted in the beta starting from October 8th. So it's pretty fair at one month heads up. So this one is from the community blog. So Deben Shah had a really interesting creator site script and site template using Power Automate in SharePoint. So basically, create those needed definitions in a tenant level using Power Automate and from a automation perspective. Really cool stuff, and walking through how it can be done and what to do and all of that stuff. So really, really cool stuff from him. And that means that then you will have a custom template available in from your organization. So really, really cool. And this one is from Louis Fries, how to get started with GitHub and Git. So quite common questions, actually. So it just this is one of those things, again, matter of a perspective, right? Of course, everybody knows what is a GitHub. No, they don't. That's not how the world works.
Yeah, exactly.
Good to have that covered. So really good stuff from Louis on explaining how to get started, but you can do different options and all of that stuff. It is not as hard as it maybe seems. And there are good online sessions in the Sharing is Caring initiative as well, helping to get started. Then this one is from Siddharth Vakhasia, actually a meeting bot to capture meeting participant information. Really cool stuff as well. So basically having an additional bot signing in to the meeting and capture information who's in the meeting. So hopefully not secretly, no, but it's basically building. And the scenario in this case is that he's using the Yo Teams to build that bot and then joining on the meeting and then capture information who's in the meeting and what they're doing. Of course, this kind of a bot will be visible as an attendee also in the meeting. So it will be visible.
Yeah, and somebody needs to add the bot to the call. Correct, yeah. It's going to just drop in there.
Silently behind the scenes.
Hello.
Hello, who's there? Yeah. I'm just capturing who's here. Now, this one is quite new, actually, from today. So global navigation in modern SharePoint using SPF, XBMB, and Fluent UI from Deepen Sean as well. So thank you, Deepen, for being really active on this thing. So this really walks through how multiple different scenarios, so communication side, application customizer, taxonomy, and Fluent UI command bar. And then the end result, I'm just going to jump here, is basically that kind of a Fluent UI toolbar experience, which you can of course style any way you want. So using the black color is not intended, not needed. So cool stuff as well. Good. And using the tenant-wide deployment options and everything else, you can make sure that it's available across the tenant, every single experience, which is really cool. Well, in SharePoint, anyway.
In Teams or in Outlook or...
Yeah, exactly. That's not unfortunately possible. Now, PMP patch, add or delete items from very large lists, more than 30,000 items. So this is basically...
300,000.
Sorry, 300. What are that's
30. 30, 300, same.
35,000 million. Whatever. So, anyway. But basically operating at the list level and then potentially deleting items as a batch and making sure that because you can't load the 300,000 items in a memory and start then deleting them, that's not possible. So you need to work in a different way.
A lot of memory.
That would be the case, yes. Yes, yeah, that is true. That is true. Historical things in my previous company before I joined Microsoft, a few years back, there was we were doing development and then there was one pop-up which was like select whatever office or country or user, and then it worked so well when there was 5 users, but then there was a customer who had like 130,000 users and the pop-up memory consumption was like 1.2 gigabytes or whatever.
Wow.
Because it's massive. It's an HTML page. So
exactly. But I mean, it only proves, right, that you need to test things at scale.
Yeah, exactly.
At kind of comparable or representative scale for how you whatever you're building is going to be used, as opposed to I'm testing. Yeah, it's so it works with 1, with 0, with 10. I'm good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Exactly. And having scripting and all of this kind of stuff available to auto-generate stuff is super important for then mass testing as well.
Yeah.
Now, Marcus Miller has actually really started blogging every single week, something new. And this is really cool scenario. So meeting app in Microsoft Teams, a pre-meeting, helping on the pronunciation of the people's names. So you can basically come to the meeting and before the meeting, see how Klaus or Hans is being pronounced using the Azure tooling. So really cool stuff. And that actually also shows here some of the interesting new addition, well, new in quotes attributes for the configurable to apps, which will make them to be available then in the meeting. So,
yep.
Good. Michael Mendes had a interesting blog article hiding the SharePoint page title with Power Automate. So basically hiding page title from where is it from here. And how you can do that. And I didn't actually read this, but I'm guessing, I don't know if you read this already, but it's basically walking through the scenario. It is using the user's access token, so it can actually modify it. There's an interesting challenge that is related on some of the attributes in the SharePoint, which is the needed permissions, for example, for an app, which is an app-only app to modify site title, would be tenant read write all. So,
wow.
Because there's no scope which would be targeting on that lower level. So there's basically scope for the list of libraries, but there's no scope, there's sites.
App only.
There's just the sites, so. Read, sites, read, write, all. But there's no, it's all sites. It's not, you can't really target
so
on
you
a lower
could,
level.
So you could use, but that is from the Microsoft Graph, right? You could use the site specific, called the site resource. Source.
I can't remember. Anyway, that's thingy.
Specific access, yes.
Remember the thingy. You can use the thingy. So, but basically, and that's an area where we're investing definitely in the future to make it more specific on the permissions flows. So, but really cool to walk through the and really good blog post for having all of the screenshots and making sure that people understand what can be done. And then here from Peter Venstra, the weekend, weekday and calendar functions in Power Apps. So basically for Power Apps side of the house, different kind of functions and how can we sort things and how can we adjust things and implement typical calendar scenarios. Now, of course, in the long run, we should have a set of standardized things like calendars and everything else available for Power Apps as a reusable controls and all of that stuff. So, but this is for sorting day headings, adjusting them and all of that stuff. So really cool stuff as well, helping certainly for people to implement their Power Apps.
Yep.
Good. That's it for this time. So we already talked about before the Mark Anderson interview on what you've been building lately. Anything else on your mind?
Well, what we haven't talked about is what are you doing next?
Oh, what am I doing next? So the Viva Connections, obviously, SPFX, big role, a lot of community stuff in the pipeline. So coordinating that stuff behind the scenes. I'm trying to, as much as possible, to delegate those things. It's getting a bit of overwhelming.
Is it?
I think we're heading gradually the good direction, so it's all good. So, I think it's a positive problem. So the community thing is catching, so which is really really good. Also, to be fair, on this upcoming weekend, so this is the 16th. No, what is the weekend? 18th. Whatever. We're gonna have a long weekend off. So with the family. So
you will have a long weekend.
Yes, you're not. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
I am not invited.
That is true, yes. And yeah, we're going to drop by in our northern Finland cottage to make sure that it's ready for winter. And so having a few days in the total darkness because there's no electricity or lights. So It's going to be pretty dark again. And it's a good reminder. It's Finland is kind of an interesting because in summertime, the sun doesn't go down. But then on wintertime, the sun doesn't necessarily
doesn't go up.
So there's there's this dualism of the country. So
yeah.
And this autumn always, in this time of autumn, you're like, oh my God, it's really dark when it gets dark. You start realizing that side of the country.
Well, but it's also an interesting thing, right? Because here we have all of the greenhouses, I think that's the word for it, and they emit so much light that in the evening, like you can in places you cannot see stars, because so much light
exactly.
lights go
light
up.
Pollution. Yes. we call it light pollution, at least in Finland. So
light pollution, never heard of it.
Yeah. So, but basically, it's blocking the what is it? What's the well, stars, and then what's the northern lights? So where we're heading right
we
now?
We don't have any of that here. Yes. We're not even north, so like yeah. Exactly. I mean, we have lights. We have, we have different shades of lights, different colors of lights. But not the Northern Lights.
Yeah. Those are freaking cool when you see them, probably. It's just amazing because the light, basically because it's just dark, then you can see the stars, and they're pretty bright, the stars, because there's no pollution or light pollution anywhere, so you can see everything. You can see the Milky Way in the stars as well, and then the Northern Lights is basically the sun, what is it, sunbeams hitting the inner, whatever, the Earth atmosphere, and then causing the shades and all of that. It's just
if you're into space and physics, this is not the show to look, to watch, to listen to learn about Northern Lights.
Official terminology is a bit
somewhere it's the stuff in the sky. It looks awesome. It's the stuff when the stuff hits the stuff. There's the stuff on the air. It's like, ooh, so beautiful. No idea.
Yes. But if you go to Google and test it out, Northern Lights, you'll get it. So, yeah. But I get it. It's hard to understand what they are.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, so I think that's more than enough for this week. So thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. And depending on which chosen path you've taken, we'll be back within the BNP week in a week. Woohoo. Later.
Bye.